Welcome to Majak Innovatsi, the podcast of Unit City dedicated to innovation from Ukraine to the world.
Привіт, I'm Dominique Piotte, I'm French and American, and I am super happy to have you with us and my dear friend Tatiana, who is actually co-hosting the podcast with me. Today we have a very special guest. He's a journalist. His name is André Degeler. He lives in the Netherlands, and we are going to talk about how do you move from Kharkiv to Groningen? Why do we all love podcasts? We will ask him if Europe is the pickle in the sandwich deck of the world, and does geography matters? And we will also ask him how many startup inhabitants there is in Ukraine versus in Europe. All those good questions. So stay tuned and welcome to Majak Innovatsi.
Majak Innovatsi. 1, 2, 3, launch.
Hi, Dominic. Thanks a lot for inviting me. Pleasure to be here.
And welcome to the show. Welcome to the podcast. What is your story? How did you came? Because I know you worked for the Kyiv Post in Ukraine, which is of course a source that we love, and you've been a tech journalist for, I'm not going to say forever because you're younger than me. But you've been a tech journalist for quite a while. How did you start working in tech and being so curious about both tech and journalism?
It certainly feels like forever, so it's been already, 11 years, I think. But yeah, the story is pretty long, so I will try to keep it a bit shorter. And I'm sure that most of the listeners have heard the name of the city I live in for the first time. So it's a city in the north of the Netherlands. It's not too big. It's called Groningen. But yeah, so I was born in Kharkiv, Ukraine, and my first reasonably serious job was a technician, a repair technician, let's say. I worked as a repair technician for computers, like PCs and peripherals and stuff like that in Kharkiv. But at the same time, I have always been very interested in the language, in writing in general. And I knew at some point that I would really rather be a journalist than continue working sort of in tech. But at the same time, I've always been very curious about tech, and that came most probably from my father, who did the same thing as I did back in the day. And so basically, I started working as a journalist in tech back in 2007, when my wife and I moved from Kharkiv to Kyiv, and I started working in a publication that was called itnews.com.ua. I'm not sure if it still exists, but what I was doing first, it was basically translating stories from English to into Russian. And then I moved on to work in a few magazines in Ukraine. Again, only writing about technology. At that point, writing about technology mostly meant writing reviews of the very first smartphones and communicators. And that was a thing back then. And also laptops and all sorts of peripherals. And from there, I moved to another magazine, which was called Computer Review, Computerное обозрение. And that was the one where I started writing more about actual business side of things. But again, at that point of time, it was not startups. It was, first of all, distributors and manufacturers of PCs and peripherals and that sort of thing. And that was until 2009, when my wife and I moved from Ukraine to the Netherlands, to the city of Groningen. And there I received my master's degree in journalism. And that's where I made sort of a switch from writing about technology in the context of Ukraine towards sort of starting to get more of a European, let's say, approach, more European outlook towards technology. And since that time, I've been working in very different capacities in very different places. But ended up in tech.eu, and we are indeed covering the European tech ecosystem. We're writing about funding, about startups, and we are, again, trying to look at the region as a whole and trying to see how the ecosystem matures, how the ecosystem evolves, what the needs of the ecosystem are, what the needs of the founders are, and what is actually going on. We're trying to look at both people, the stories, but also at the data and see what we can make out of it.
And you run a podcast which is dedicated to innovations, technologies.
Yes.
I would like to ask you, what do you think about podcasting in terms of the media?
I love it. I absolutely love podcasting. So this is not the first podcast that I'm doing right now. So right now I am the host and producer of a TechEU podcast where I talk about tech news every week and run some interviews with founders and ecosystem players. Before that, a couple of years ago, I did another podcast which was not successful at all. I think I recorded like 11 or 12 episodes. It was called Proceed Podcast. It was about Central and Eastern European ecosystems. So basically everything, including Ukraine. But yeah, since then, I've been very much in awe with podcasting as a medium. I think it's great. It's one of the best ways to sort of talk to your audience. It's much more intimate than writing, but also it requires a whole lot of work, and it requires very different type of writing if you want to do a scripted podcast, for example. But I think now we can all see since last year that podcasting is picking up so much, and it has becoming so popular, it's getting so much into mainstream that it's getting much harder to actually get a new show off the ground.
I would like actually to go a little bit deeper on this and to dig a little bit, because of course I think we all see the power of podcasting. Actually, Tatiana comes from the more, I would own traditional radio business. I used to have a radio show in France for more than 10 years every week. So I think we both know pretty well the power of the voice and how you share different type of emotions, of feelings, of information, and also the power of conversations that you can have with podcasts. But why do you think it's becoming so popular now? Is there anything that is specific to that format, the podcast, that makes it like appealing today?
It's a really good question. I don't really know. I'm pretty sure that at least, I don't know, one third of it all is due to the hype. So a third of it all is probably a bubble, just because so many bigger companies make such big bets in podcasting, pay huge amounts of money for podcasting studios. We have seen deals with Gimlet, with Wondery, all sorts of companies around this ecosystem. But in general, it could be because of the rise of the voice assistants, of the rise of these smart speakers present in more and more homes. So maybe just more people have realized that it could be interesting to just listen without watching. Also, maybe many people have grown tired of watching the endless videos on YouTube, and maybe they like the audio more. But at the same time, there are people who have been doing podcasts for like 20 years.
Don't you think, and I've been thinking actually a lot of this, because we saw the rise of Netflix and the fact that people can watch on demand whenever they want, whatever type of video or film or series. And I think to me, the podcast is also type of that kind of the same idea. I can access to my content whenever I want, wherever I am, and I'm not stuck with a radio program where I turn on the radio and I listen to what it is. And to me, actually, it brings me a lot of freedom in the way I access to the content. And I think it's also a new business model for a lot of tech companies, actually. This freedom of accessing the content whenever you want, whatever device you want to.
Yeah, absolutely. This is a reason for sure, and on-demand content is something that has been on the rise for a while. But still, the question remains why the rise of the podcasting comes after the rise of Netflix. Because, you know, a lot of things that are being done with video today and over the past few years, these would not have been possible, let's say, 10 years ago. Everything that's being done right now with podcasting would have been possible, no problem at all, 10, 15 years ago. The microphones haven't really changed that much, and downloading a 20 to 60 minutes of audio does not take that much of bandwidth. You don't have these sort of limitations that you have with video streaming. So why podcasting is picking up right now, it is still like a very big question, which I think not a single person can answer definitively.
Okay, let's move to another topic, which is actually Europe, because now you're based in Europe, you're covering tech in Europe, and I will come back to Ukraine later, but I want to talk about Europe, and I'm going to make it very like a caricature. I feel like Europe, tech in Europe, is kind of taken into a sandwich between the US, Silicon Valley, to make it short, and China. And Europe is kind of in between and having a hard time finding its voice in the tech scene, pushing its own technology, its own way to build startup, its own ecosystem. I'm even sometimes wondering, does Europe exist in terms of tech? From the Netherlands, what do you see?
Well, I think the sandwich view is like, it does make sense. It's not necessarily always like this, and again, it depends on which part of the technology ecosystem we're looking at. Because if we're talking about like the bigger tech companies, then for sure, I mean, there are not that many very big players, the players of the size and scale of Facebook and Apple and Amazon and their Chinese counterparts like Tencent or Alibaba or Ant Group. So in that sense, of course. But at the same time, in terms of startups, I think we are in a better position than we used to be, for sure. And I think there are already certainly some niches which Europe is proving to be pretty good at. For example, the fintech niche. This is something that we have been seeing over the past year. There have been quite a bunch of companies that have emerged in Europe, which have a pretty good shot at becoming really big global players, at least in the Western world. If you think about Checkout.com, if you think about Adyen, if you think about Klarna, and for example, also we have Spotify, which I think is like the only sort of player in the entertainment business, but still, we do have success stories. We do have players who can certainly be big on the international scale, but we still don't have this very, very huge industry-defining companies that would be on the same sort of playing field as the FANG, so-called, and the Chinese corporations.
Do you think, I mean, most people don't even know that Spotify is European. Do you think it, and when you ask people, most people don't know that Skype actually is or was a European company. Do you think it matters? Geography matters?
It depends on from what point of view you look at it. And I think one of the big reasons why people aren't always aware that certain companies come from Europe is because many of these companies, especially when they get bigger, they tend to either move to the US, move their headquarters to the US, or at least go public in the US. And this is a whole different topic. It's a rabbit hole that you can spend a lot of time in, why these companies go list in the US. But in general, geography, it does matter for the ecosystem itself here in Europe, because obviously the more awareness of European companies there is, the more, for example, funding we as in Europe, the European ecosystem can get from across the Atlantic, and the more, for example, talent we could engage with as a tech ecosystem and so on. Of course, in the grand scheme of things, from the humanity point of view, probably it doesn't matter whether the next big company comes from Europe or China or wherever else. But of course, it is very important for the development and growth of the ecosystem per se.
And what do you think? Does Ukraine belong to the, this European tech scene, or is it something separate from Europe?
No, it's certainly not separate. I think it does. It is part of Europe. It is part of the Central and Eastern European sort of sub ecosystem. That's for sure. It is included usually in, for example, big reports that come on the European tech ecosystem. So I was just preparing for this podcast, and I was looking at the latest report by Atomico, State of European Tech, because we at TechEU, we have our own data, but we are yet to finalize all the numbers. So I was looking at what the colleagues over at Atomico have come up with. And yes, Ukraine is there. It's not very big. Like one number, an interesting number that I saw in that report is the number of startups per 1 million population. So in Ukraine, this number is 19. So there are 19 startups per 1 million people in Ukraine. This is a very low number. So European average is exactly 10 times higher. It's 190 per 1 million. And in the Netherlands, where I live currently, it is 507. Startups, but it's not the worst. We're not the worst in the list. I'm in Ukraine, so there are still a few countries behind us, and these startups, although there are not that many of them, but they do attract funding, they do raise money, and they are some of them at least known outside of Ukraine. They are known as a part of that ecosystem. So certainly, Ukraine is part of European tech ecosystem. That's absolutely for sure.
How do you see? So you left Ukraine quite a few years ago, but still following tech from the beginning. How do you see the Ukrainian tech scene evolving, and what makes it strong or not as strong?
It's a really good question. I can't say that I am following it very closely. So at the moment, I think I'm mostly following it as part of European ecosystem in general. And like, Ukraine has always been a place where you get really good engineers, right? It's a cliche by now, I know, but it is I think the case still, and I keep still hearing sometimes references towards really smart people coming out of Ukraine or being in Ukraine working for Ukrainian startups and so on. So this is certainly the strong part, and this is where the awareness of the Ukrainian ecosystem lies. But as an ecosystem, that's the thing. So basically, it has to become an ecosystem. It has to become a coherent ecosystem countrywide, which I'm not sure is actually happening right now. I think, and again, this is a perspective of someone who has not been living in Ukraine for more than 3 months in a row since 2009. Sometimes it feels like there is a whole lot of startups that sort of gravitate towards Kyiv, leaving those empty gaps and holes in the places where they are actually coming from. So there, although I see certainly clusters, IT clusters growing in the regions of Ukraine, Kharkiv IT cluster, and in Odessa, in Lviv, and in Kyiv itself, but it's still mostly the outsourcing software development ecosystem rather than startup ecosystem. So I think it is getting better. And I have talked, for example, to people from Kharkiv a few times from my hometown who are trying to bring up these sort of grassroots initiatives for a startup ecosystem on the local level. So there has been development, but at the same time, because of this gravitational force that's pulling startups towards the capital, it is really hard for Ukraine, in my opinion, to become this one coherent startup ecosystem that works in a decentralized manner, let's say.
How do you change that? What do you need to create a strong ecosystem? And I'm going to give you an example. I remember when I was younger, definitely in France, working in tech, beginning of the 2000s, I was struggling in the tech ecosystem because there was a few startups, but it was just the beginning. There was not a lot of funding available, and then all the good people were living mostly to Silicon Valley, which is basically what I did in 2004, because this is where it was happening. Now, when I look at what's happening in France today, I see a tech ecosystem. I see a strong ecosystem. But what do you think we need in Ukraine that we don't have yet to create that ecosystem, or what, from your experience in Europe?
I think it's not necessarily anything that has to come from the government or from elsewhere. The first thing I think is that we need the critical mass of entrepreneurs, right? We just need more people who would consider entrepreneurship as their career choice. And basically, because the more people like this you have, the more normal it is for a young person, for example, to become an entrepreneur rather than going at no. Working as a software developer or anything else, the more people we have for whom this is a good choice to become an entrepreneur, the more they form communities themselves. Because right now, for example, in one of those, let's say, in the regions of Ukraine, if you are an entrepreneur and you just see, like, I don't know, 2-3 people around you in your own hometown, and then everybody else is in Kyiv, and even in Kyiv, there are not that many people who do the same thing, you will probably think 2 or more times before actually choosing to start your own company, start your own business. But if you see much more social acceptance around this, I think this is the first requirement for an ecosystem to form.
What do you think Ukraine need to have a role into the tech scene? And I'm going to take a few examples. One of the well-known company from Ukraine is Grammarly. Except that nobody knows that it's from Ukraine. Preply, BetCube. I mean, when we start looking at those companies that are more or less known, nobody knows they're Ukrainian. Why so? Everybody knows Skype is Estonian.
Not many people outside of our tech bubble know that some of the, like Spotify, for example, is a European company because it's based, headquartered in the US, and it's listed in the US as well. It's the same thing. It's the same thing for Ukraine and sort of either Europe or the US. The companies from Ukraine mostly get incorporated outside of Ukraine, then either in Europe or in the US, depending usually on where their first investors are located and what's the best place for them, and that's. That's basically the recipe of what needs to be changed, right? So that there has to be created certain environment, a legal environment for Ukrainian tech companies to incorporate in Ukraine. Maybe in the future to list in Ukraine, but that's way too far in the future. I don't even want to look that far. But yeah, this is the main thing. You want Ukrainian companies to stay in Ukraine, to incorporate in Ukraine, to hire Ukrainian talent. And for that, unfortunately, everything needs to change, right? Everything needs to improve. The whole country needs to improve. So it's not something small that you can do and then you get this great ecosystem flourish all of a sudden. But it's that sort of high tide that lifts all ships, including the tech ecosystem.
What do you think is really needed to have a tech ecosystem? And I'm saying this because I see countries where basically I don't see it happening. I don't know, some countries in Africa, some countries in South America. It's going to be tougher for them to create a tech ecosystem. What are the components you need to create a good tech ecosystem?
Actually, not at all. I'm pretty sure that most of the African countries are having pretty vibrant tech ecosystems, but we just don't really know about them because they are local and they are very different from the ecosystem that we are used to seeing. For example, in Africa, you have a lot of companies that work within this sort of phone economy, right?
Yes.
So it's which
payments,
is very different.
Phone.
Yeah, which is very different. Again, in South America, things are again very different, but also very vibrant. For example, in Chile, they had this very big experiment, if you will, but there was this, I'm not sure if it exists still, but there was this Startup Chile initiative, which in which basically the government decided to bite the bullet and sort of expedite the creation and catalyze the creation of a startup ecosystem in the country, which meant that they gave a huge amount of money to startups to come to Chile and to work there for a certain amount of time. So you could basically, as a startup, it was not that hard to go to Chile and stay there for a while and get, if I'm not mistaken, $25,000, which is a good sum for a very early stage startups. And actually, I know Ukrainian startups that they did that as well. So one of the ways is to throw money at the ecosystem and see whether it brings any tangible results. But then you need to be ready to throw a whole lot of money and not expect any results within the first, 5 to 10 years. This is probably not the case, not something that Ukraine can be doing. Though I'm pretty sure there are much better ways to spend money right now than throwing them at a bunch of entrepreneurs. Other than that, it has to. I'm sure that it has to come from the bottom up. It just has to come from people. And again, coming back to the previous point about that we need more entrepreneurs, maybe you just need to start from the educational institutions again to normalize entrepreneurship as a career. To show the role models, if you will, to get people who have founded successful startups in who are from Ukraine to come and talk to these educational institutions to just show that it is in fact possible and there are endless possibilities in the world, in the beautiful world of technology and entrepreneurship, to create something and to build something and to become successful without becoming, I don't know, like a lawyer or a software developer in an outsourcing company.
And for you as a tech journalist, who are the tech heroes from Ukraine and maybe worldwide? Maybe some recent stories you covered about some tech successes.
That's a really interesting question. I don't necessarily think about it in these terms, but I mean, in Ukraine, we certainly... I'm sure we all know the biggest successes. We know the Grammarlys and Riddles and PetCubes, Preplys of this world. So I'm certainly very much. I have a lot of respect to these entrepreneurs. I know most of them, and I'm very happy that they exist. And what I'm actually mostly happy about is that they always. They never hide that they come from Ukraine, right? Most of them are actually trying to, again, raise awareness of Ukraine as the country of their origin and show everything that's good about Ukraine. So, for sure. And recently also, it was really interesting to read and follow the story of a startup that's called Ekoiz.me, if you don't remember that one. It's a really interesting startup from Ukraine. It's been around for many years. It had ups and downs, and at the same time, it ended at some point, it ended up going bust. It filed for bankruptcy, but then... And the founder, Ivan, he was really open and candid about it. And he recorded a podcast just recently about the story of the podcast, and he wrote about it extensively. And it's really great in this case that he, as a founder, was able to tell the story in full. And because, again, one of the things that... ensures a healthy ecosystem, tech entrepreneurial ecosystem, is that failure is accepted. Like if your startup has gone bust, it doesn't make you a lesser person. It doesn't make you a worse entrepreneur necessarily. It basically gives you experience. And this is something, again, that we all need to think about a bit more, because right now, sometimes when someone's company isn't really working out, it becomes a stigma for their whole life. And so this is also a good point to make towards what needs to be changed for creation of a good ecosystem. And about European tech heroes, it's really... Like every person I interview for the podcast, at the end of the interview, I think that they are absolutely my tech hero. That's for sure. So, yeah. So from the latest episodes, I interviewed really interesting people who have like tens of decades of experience in tech, and one of them was one of the first people to create text messaging. And then to create sort of mass text messaging. So these people, like, they're very much engineers, the engineers from like 20, 30 years ago, who have paved the way to what we are doing and building and using right now. These are the people I'm very fascinated with.
Thank you.
When you look at 2021, what do you see? What are the big trends you see in tech for 2021 from your perspective?
If the year 2020 and the first month of 2021 has have taught us anything, it is that there is no point in trying to predict anything at all. But in general, if we think about European tech, what I'm thinking is we're going to see a whole bunch of European startups going public. Because last year, somehow we had this sort of IPO desert, as it was called in some media. There were very, very few public listings from European companies. This is most certainly going to change this year. We are going to see very, very high valuations. And if the year 2020 is any indication, we are also going to see a whole lot of bigger funding rounds for European startups, because again, because the ecosystem matures, and there are more startups that are coming to the stage when they need to raise very significant amounts of money. So basically, in north of 200-300 million euros. And what you do then, you either look for these really big investors, mostly coming from the US, unfortunately for the ecosystem in Europe, of course, or you go public. And since there are more and more startups coming to this stage, this is what most probably is going to happen. I would think would happen in Ukraine, but that's something I actually have no idea about. I do hope to see more startups coming from the country. I do want to hear about more funding rounds. And if you are listening to this and you're a startup in Ukraine who's raising money, do let us know. We are very happy to cover your rounds and write about you. This is what we exist for.
So that is actually very cool, because I think we don't hear enough those stories of Ukrainian startup raising money. We hear a little bit about them in Ukraine, but even in Ukraine, not enough, definitely. And we need more success story. You mentioned a point that is very important to me, which is we don't have enough strong VCs in Europe. And in Ukraine, we almost have none. And the numbers we have from the UVCA, which is a Ukrainian Venture Capital Association, is that 90% of the money invested in Ukraine in startup comes from the US. 10% comes from the rest of the world, including Ukraine. So it's really clear. The money comes from the US in Ukraine. It's also the case in Europe. Why so? Because we have money in Europe. We have strong financial institution. Why do you think there's not a culture or capacities to have more local funds?
This is changing. First of all, I'm pretty sure that we are now having much more money coming into European startups from Europe. But then again, where it comes to those mega rounds that I just mentioned, yes, indeed, it's, I think, mostly US investors at the moment. Mm-hmm. As far as I understand the situation, the point is that all this money, which we do indeed have in Europe, a lot of all this money is tied in vehicles that are much more risk averse, let's say, than similarly sized vehicles in the US. So you have the family offices, you have pension funds, which are rarely engaged in any venture capital related activity, which is different in the US. It is even different in Canada. For example, there is this VC firm called Omers Ventures, and it's a Canadian pension money from a Canadian pension fund. And yes, they do invest in North America, and they have an increasingly big presence in Europe. So I have heard about things changing in this respect since, I think, 3 years ago at least. I do see it changing slowly, but certainly it's not changing quick enough. But again, it's basically the question of convincing the people who make decisions about this money that investing in tech companies on different stages, basically becoming LPs to VCs on different stages, is a very, very valid strategy, very valid investment strategy.
That's great. Well, thank you very much. We have a tradition in this show, which is to ask our guest to choose a song that he particularly likes, or that illustrates his state of mind, or that reminds him of something. What would be your choice?
Interesting. To be entirely honest, my Spotify account, for example, is now totally screwed. Because I mostly listen to like instrumental music when I work, and now Spotify thinks that all I like in terms of music is just instrumental titles, like very sort of concentration kind of music. But then, okay, when I don't do that, of the songs I've been listening to a lot lately, that would be the soundtrack from the Hamilton musical, and the song would be called My Shot.
I am not throwing away my shot. I am not throwing away my shot. Hey, yo, I'm just like my country. I'm young, scrappy, and hungry, and I'm not throwing away my shot. I'ma get a scholarship to King's College. I probably shouldn't brag, but dag, I'm amazed and astonished. The problem is I got a lot of brains, but no polish. I gotta holler just to be heard with every word. I drop knowledge. I'm a diamond in the rough, a shiny piece of coal, trying to reach my goal. My power of speech, unimpeachable. Only 19, but my mind is older. These New York City streets get cold. I shoulder every burden, every disadvantage I've learned to manage. I don't have a gun to brandish. I walk these streets famished. The plan is to fan this spark into a flame. But damn, it's getting dark, so let me spell out the name. I am the A-L-E-X-A-N-D-E-R. We are meant to be.
Thank you so much. It was great to have you on the show. And we can't wait to have you in Ukraine to show you a few startups, to show you the wonderful tech ecosystem we have here in Unit City, in Kyiv, in Kharkiv, where we have Unit City, by the way. Yes, absolutely. And in Lviv, where we will have it soon. But it was a great pleasure to have you on board. Well, the link to your website and to your podcast are in the comments below.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Dominik. Thank you, Tatiana. And I'm very much looking forward to talking to you in person sometime soon.
We are. Thank you, Andre. See you very soon. Bye.